the many powers of love. I'm sure you all know that love is a word of many meanings. It's hard to keep track of who's talking about what when people talk about love. I mean, it can be a like on Facebook, or it could be a lifelong devotion, or a deep spiritual engagement. Very often, it's just synonymous with wanting. You know, oh, I'd love that. I really love this thing that I don't want to lose. And so it's part of that electrifying experience of infatuation. And of course, in almost its pure form, it's lust, all of which gets confused or gets to march under the banner of the word love. In these latter forms, it has a terrible power that can just make people crazy. I mean, Romeo and Juliet. And in this form, it can lead to obviously hasty commitments and many unhappy relationships. And just in general, whether those relationships are one after the other or one long one, it is not healthy if this aspect of wanting is mistaken for a respectful appreciation of what is being loved or who. And love can, very often, be what we'll be discussing tonight, which, and I'll define it for purposes of this talk, it's acceptance. Deeply knowing, understanding, and being totally open to whatever, this thing. And I'm going to suggest that this is the most satisfying form of what's called love. When I was growing up, what did I want most from my parents? Was to be clearly seen and accepted for who I was. That was the love that I always wanted. In this talk, love is based on this thorough seeing and acceptance. And that definition makes meditation literally a practice in love, because in meditation, we're constantly accepting our incoming experience. We do what Buddha calls seeing deeply. Our practice requires faith that we can endure what we don't like. And this is the same as loving people. No one can be perfect and tick all of our boxes, if only because we change and our boxes change. It's guaranteed there's going to be something that annoys us. And it's also the same as loving all of life. Try to get through a day without being annoyed. Try it. It's wonderful when it happens. Each time I talk about acceptance, I have to emphasize that it's not the same as approval. With acceptance, we're just recognizing it is what it is, and we're not retreating into denial or holding on to our aversion to it. We can disapprove and still accept. Parents have to do this all the time with their children. That's love. So it's love that lets us be fully present, without judgment, resentment, etc. It overcomes the aversions or hatred. It allows us to clearly see and be with whatever is. Without love for ourselves and our experience, we'll struggle to establish mindfulness because dukkha keeps distracting us. When we accept and embrace all that we see in meditation, mindfulness can arise and abide and defeat dukkha. Sometimes we have to try loving something else before we can turn attention to the things that we despise and accept them. For example, caring for people who are gravely ill. We see, smell, and feel their suffering. We don't like it, but our love for those people lets us be present with this trying experience. Another example is dealing with difficult people. For example, committee meetings, which can be really challenging. Try focusing on the people there who we do feel a connection with and our reason for the meeting. For example, a paycheck. And that might make it easier to deal with the irritation. This happens to me often in daily life. My attention will get stuck on something that upsets me. Despite my repeated failures to solve the problem, it's still there, it's still irritating me. So here I am, I'm stuck on something that's irritating me. And if I look out at the garden, or I call up a friend and chat for a little while, and then I turn back to what's bothering me, it's suddenly much easier to deal with. It's like I've switched on my own capacity to love by doing it. And I'm able to see and understand what was bothering me and see the best course of action for me to take about it. Love lets us connect with other beings. In the Nalaka Sutta, the Buddha said, "Be unopposed, unattached to beings moving and still. As I am, so are these. As are these, so am I." Beings moving and still. That pretty much covers everything. You know, can you think of anything that isn't either moving or still? So be unopposed to them all, unattached. Caring about others and their welfare brings them into what I call the circle of dearness that we habitually reserve for ourselves. And the more holes that we poke into this circle by bringing others inside, the less cut off we become from other beings, moving or still. We begin to see that we and they are fundamentally the same. As I am, so are these. As these are, so am I. So how should we care about other beings? There's a fun sutta called the Acrobat Sutta, also known as the Sadaka Sutta. The Buddha told the story of a bamboo acrobat who told his assistant, who was charmingly named Frying Pan, to stand on his shoulder once he had climbed up to the top of this bamboo pole. He told her, "You look after me and I'll look after you, and then we'll both be safe and get our reward." Frying Pan said, "Oh no, you should look after yourself, and I'll look after myself." The Buddha said, "We should watch out for ourselves and others." The monks asked, "How can we do both?" Buddha said, "By practicing. It isn't a light switch that we just flip on. We need to practice and cultivate this ability to love all things moving and still." So we need to intentionally work at it. And Buddha said, that way you learn how, when watching after others, you watch after yourself. Because we're the same. This is why I always say we have to cultivate metta and compassion for ourselves and for others. Doing it only in one direction leaves us still cut off from the rest of the world and trapped inside our isolated selves. In contrast, when the illusion of any barrier or separation between us and others is dissolved, we are free and most able to be safe and keep others safe. Love protects us in the battle of life. It guides our choices so that we minimize harm to all. We don't want all of these beings that we care about to be harmed, and so we act accordingly. Gil Fronsdale, in his article, aptly titled "The Buddha's Teachings on Love," says, "It can be easy to love all beings in the abstract, but it can be a great challenge to do so when we have to live with them. It is one thing to love and another to express love in daily life. One of the most rewarding spiritual practices is to cultivate the ability to bring love into all aspects of our life and to all people we encounter. This entails learning how to include love's presence while we speak to others, are in conflict with others, and are living with others. While this can be a daunting task, it begins by having the intention to do so. And it is supported by appreciating each manifestation of love that we encounter." And there are days when I'll go about my business and I'll see someone doing something loving toward another being. And if I let myself savor that, if I let that into my heart, it helps me, you know, just like looking out at the garden or talking to a friend. It helps keep love just part of how I'm going about my day. But often, you know, it isn't love that we run into, or even that complex mixture of love that I talked about a while ago, but it's outright resistance. How can love protect us against the adversity of others? I'm reminded of a passage in the Bible about wearing the armor of God. In fact, I think it says to put on the armor of God. And I know a very nice guy who says that he visualizes this every morning, donning that equipment that the ancient warriors would wear, the chest plate, the arm and the shin guards and the helmet, maybe pick up a sword and a shield, trot off into his day. I asked him, how does visualizing all of this protect you? He said, well, after I get all of that on, nobody is going to mess with me. Love is not capitulation or weakness. It reassures and strengthens us, giving us literally the courage and the power of our commitments. Probably the quintessential example of the power of love is the mother who suddenly acquires the ability to lift a car off her child. And nothing heals our suffering mind states better than love. I was working on this Dharma talk 3 days ago, and beep, I got an email from my healthcare plan that said, humans have evolved as a social species. We live together and have communities that keep us psychologically and physically healthy. They let us lead happier, more fulfilling lives. There was a video attached to it, and I don't usually fall for that, but since it was right on topic, I did. I listened to it, and it was all about promoting face-to-face interaction, you know, getting off of your cell phone and out actually dealing with beings moving and still. It said that when we do this, it's been demonstrated that this connection helps with the immune system, mood elevation, sleep, weight loss, mental acuity, memory, productivity, and longevity. That's a pretty good deal just for getting out and letting ourselves do what comes naturally to us as a species, and that is care about each other. This was a video that was posted on YouTube, so right next to it was one that demonstrated that these benefits also come from connecting with other forms of life, not just human. And that's why there are so many hospices and rehab centers and other care facilities that bring pets in for the residents to pet or play with. So this is another reminder that love works in both directions. It's not just being loved that brings us these benefits, but it's our own activity of loving, our exercising this capacity that we have. Through love, we can see the wonder of the universe, the beauty of this world, and want to tend it. Gill, in that article I mentioned earlier, said that jhana practice, that's deep concentration, often fills meditators with a glowing love for all that is. And this can quickly fade, though, if it's not acted on. And I found over the years that by supporting, however meagerly I'm able to, the Natural Resources Defense Council, the Sierra Club, the World Wildlife Fund, and also my interest in everything that's alive, does help keep that love glowing in my daily life. I think that's one of the reasons why my retreat practice is almost entirely these summer midweek retreats. They're similar to in-person interactions with other people and domestic animals, except that it's an interaction with wildlife, observing and respecting them as thoroughly as I stay present with myself when I'm meditating on those retreats. After the Hubble telescope gave us those incredible photographs of stars being born, do you remember that 20, 30 years ago? I searched and was able to find posters of those pictures and had them framed and put them up in my house and lived with that for many years. And those images are still kind of burned onto the back of my skull so that I see them now whenever other people speak of spiritual awe or their idea of God. How can it take anything more to convince us this universe is miraculous and beautiful? And knowing that, how can we not want to preserve the majesty of nature in all of its expressions? I think you've picked up by now on how love is very closely related to metta, generosity, kindness, and compassion. In fact, they're all really just aspects of the same kind of cosmic experience that we're able to have. And that experience is especially powerful when it suffuses our practice. The Buddha said, we can cultivate the liberation of mind by loving kindness. Make it our vehicle. Make it our basis. Exercise ourselves in it and fully perfect it. I love that notion of exercising ourselves in love. It brings to mind the image of a bear rolling around in the dust, deliriously happy. Cultivate love. Exercise in it. Make it our vehicle, our basis, and fully perfect it. Thank you.